I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to Upfront. I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
Chelsea pulled off the impossible. They beat Barcelona in Barcelona and kept a clean sheet. But was it all down to playing dirty? Don't be bitter. We react to an Emma Hayes / Jess Carter / Erin Cuthbert masterclass. Back on English shores, Manchester City kept their foot on the gas in the WSL title race with a massive 5-0 win over West Ham. Is it their title for the taking? And the final weekend of the Championship season is here, but look who's on top of the tree. It's only my old lot, Crystal Palace. We talk about their season and how they transformed themselves into a WSL team in waiting. Right, Rach, you've been here, there and everywhere, haven't you? Burning your passport end to end all over the shop. But before we get stuck into the nitty-gritty of the weekend, what was your moment? What's your moment
Hola,
been?
Hola, ¿cómo estás? No, I was
nice.
I was going to go with the Chelsea one, but we are going to talk about Chelsea. So I think I'm going to go with seeing the reception for Frida Molnar and Viviane Miedema coming back onto the pitch at the Emirates. Lovely moment. I think we weren't 100% sure whether they were going to be in the match day squad after the press conference. So to see them both on the bench was amazing, but to then see them both come on as well. And the applause, the uproar was pretty special. And there was a moment where Molnar almost set up Miedema, and I think the ball was either saved or kind of hit the crossbar. It was so close. It would have been like the ultimate moment. But I think that for me will be a moment of the weekend, because it's always nice seeing players coming back.
Oh, mate, that was a really beautiful moment of the weekend. Really heartwarming. Very, very special. For me, I think it's got to be, and I know we're going to touch it later on, so I don't want to get too like bogged down in the detail, but Crystal Palace. I just feel like there's this overwhelming sense of like emotion, just the kind of like they're on the precipice. They've pretty much tied up the championship, bar, you know, it's just kind of done. And like, I just feel like
25 goal swing.
Did I leave too early? Like, did I not? But we'll talk about Crystal Palace a little bit more towards the end of the show. But my God, yeah, just the moment that I think that team realised that actually they're going to be going into the WSL. I think that's such a historic thing. And like when I had that same feeling with Spurs when we had one of our last games of the championship against Aston Villa, we needed that draw and we got it. It was just like, it's life changing because you just don't know where your life's going to take you. But I said I wouldn't get bogged down. Okay, relax, breathe. Right, cool. More drama over in Barcelona. I mean, at the stadium, the Olympic Louis Companies Stadium, Chelsea's 1-0 historic win over Barcelona. Obviously, there was so much doubt around Chelsea sort of after two cup exits and then them going on to beat Barcelona in their own back garden. I mean, Barcelona hadn't lost at home since February 2019. I mean, Rach, you were there. It was such a big moment. And you know it's going to be a big game when Stephanie Frappart is refereeing and Emma Hayes is in a formal long coat. Like, you just know something juicy is coming.
It was a beautiful blue suit that Emma Hayes was wearing. Incredible stadium, first of all. The stadium was unreal. Historic to be at that stadium. It's huge. Sun was shining. You know, the blue and red of the Barcelona flags is like pops with the blue sky. And it was amazing. And yeah, the game was tense. But do you know what? I think tactically, Emma Hayes absolutely nailed it. She's come up against Barcelona before. We've spoken in the past about how Chelsea tend to improve in second leg games. And I feel like she's massively, you know, learned from the experiences they've had against Barcelona, know where the threats are. And this is the thing with Barca, right? You can know where the threats are. Mm-hmm. It's just really bloody hard to nullify them. And actually, I think Chelsea did a really good job of that. Three at the back, they had, you know, Lawrence and Johanna Wright and Canerid playing, you know, full-back wingers, if you know what I mean, but also providing that extra defensive cover. And I thought having Charles and Lawrence marshalling Caroline Graham-Hansen was genius. She really struggled to influence the game the way she normally does because she's normally such a threat. Mm-hmm. You know, serious doggedness in midfield. Erin Cuthbert was superb. Bonmati, again, probably didn't have the level of influence we're used to seeing from her. And I thought Chelsea did a really good job of getting forward and actually creating opportunities. Myra Ramirez was brilliant, really unlucky not to score a goal. She had a couple of opportunities and she really ran the, like, the defense was stressed about her. She was stressing their defense out. They were getting pretty physical, trying to keep her down, and sometimes literally putting her down.
I just thought like she was such a good outlet for Chelsea. I feel like there was like really, you know, there was times where Chelsea would come under the cosh, barrage after attack, and I think like getting the ball out to Ramirez, you know, their hold up play is absolutely fantastic, and not just holding the ball up but progressing it. And there were times that I was a little bit frustrated at Chelsea, I suppose, because Ramirez was driving into these amazing areas, taking on two players, barging, you know, using her physicality and her body to kind of get into these great positions, trying to fire in, sort of get the assist, and no one's on the end of it because she's already done such an amazing job and people haven't caught up. So that I was frustrated for her in some moments.
Yeah, but it's difficult, right? Because you've got Lawrence and Canerid kind of providing that defensive cover, and then they transition so quickly that they then have to bomb up the pitch. And to be honest, I did think they actually did a pretty good job of managing both of those roles in the game. There were also times where, and I think this happened in the Conte Cup final as well, is that the ball would fall in the right place but to the wrong person. Mm-hmm. You know, and it often came to, say, Melanie Leupolz, who's not necessarily known for her goal scoring prowess. Same thing happened in the Conte Cup a couple of times where you're like, golden opportunity, but maybe not the person you want at that moment on the ball. But still, you know, yes, Barcelona had a lot of possession, they're always going to, but they were really struggling to create any clear-cut opportunities. And the fact that they had one shot on target, which came in injury time, is wild.
That was literally the stat that I was going to pull out. I was just like, that is such a, not only is the win historic, but how they achieved the win is even more historic in a way. It's sort of, I mean, they went into halftime behind for only the second time this season. And I feel like even sort of looking at the sort of, you know, they became more aggressive, their kind of individual duels were increasing. But I've got to say a big part of that was down to how well Chelsea nullified Barcelona's attack. And you kind of think about the discipline. I mean, we've got to touch, I think, a little bit on Jess Carter. Obviously, she won player Unreal. Of the match, and she was part of obviously the back three with Neve Charles and Khadija Buchanan. But she was just so integral. The sliding challenges, how timely they were, how much she was able to limit Paraluelo. And you just think, wow, like to see her progression and all the things that people are talking about, like, you know, is she quick enough? Can she get into the right position? She, time and time again, she's proving herself as absolutely one of the best defenders in the WSL. And you can see why. That was just a masterclass from her.
She's so good in a back three, and, you know, she made some really good recovery tackles where you thought, okay, they're in here, and she'd suddenly come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. She just had one of those games where, and this is the thing, when you play Barcelona, to beat them, you essentially have to be almost perfect, right? And it's very, very hard to do that. Chelsea, there were elements of Chelsea's game that they're going to want to improve, right? They weren't perfect, mm-hmm. but they had players who had near perfect games, which I think massively helped, Jess Carter being one of them. I thought Charles and Lawrence were superb. Wrighton Cannaridge for me is one of Chelsea's players of the season. Erin Cuthbert, and of course Jess Carter, she was incredible. And I did ask Emma Hayes about her post-match, and she said she doesn't often necessarily talk about individuals, you know what managers are like, but she, a glowing report for Jess. She was excellent. But yeah, it's a difficult balance, right? Because as Emma Hayes wants to say, they want to be pragmatic. It's only half time, mm-hmm. but you still have to be able to recognise the achievement. And it is an achievement. And these records of not being beaten since February 2019, not scoring a goal since April, I can't remember how many years it's been, you know, having one shot on target. These are things that should be celebrated. But you also then have to manage your expectations, mm-hmm. because Barcelona are hurt. They're a hard enough team to play, but a team that have something even more to fight for that are hurt are even scarier. And I think Emma Hayes knows that.
Oh, 100%. I think, you touched a little bit there on Erin Cuthbert. We've kind of got to talk about the wonder goal, the reason, I suppose, in a way that they kind of like, they've gone into this second leg now with a bit more of a kind of advantage. I mean, it's a very small advantage given it's Barcelona and you really don't know what's going to happen. And Barcelona, like you said, are wounded. But I mean, captain Erin Cuthbert, I mean, the goal itself, I mean, it was such a beautiful run of play, sort of picking out these passes, really breaking open the Barcelona back line. I mean, when Cuthbert shot, there was only sort of her really in the edge, on the edge of the box, and sort of like this great area. And there were four Barcelona players around her. And to find that whip shot, took it past the keeper. Keeper had absolutely no chance. I mean, Rach, what was your reaction when that goal hit the back of the net? I can imagine the crowd, sort of most part of it, going fairly silent, given they're all red and blue shirts.
It was, I mean, unprofessional is a bit strong, but I was sat because I wanted to get Chelsea walking out, mm-hmm. as photographer. So it meant I was sat in Chelsea's defending end for the first half, surrounded by Barcelona photographers, right? So my reaction was like to clap my hands and be like, yes, and then realize, oh, shouldn't have done that.
Very unprofessional.
I've heard from the press box as well, similar from the journalists there who kind of all stood up and were like, come on. And then we're like, shouldn't do that. So yeah, it's one of those where you just get really excited. You know, it's a long way to go. It's what, the 40th minute, maybe 41st minute, you know, got to temper your expectations. But goals against Barcelona are hard to come by. So like I said, I really want to enjoy the fact that Chelsea managed to beat them, but also have to be very pragmatic and know that it's just half time. But I will say, another player I didn't mention, Nuskin, I think she was the one who set that up. She kind of rolled the defender and managed to poke the ball out to Erin Cuthbert, another player who had a great game. So that was the thing. I think a lot of players were totally on it. And for anyone who maybe made the little mistake here and there, they were surrounded by teammates who were there to kind of back them up. But I think it's a very hard thing to do. You tell me, as a player, it's one thing physically being up against a team for 90 minutes, but mentally staying switched on in those kind of games must be so hard.
Oh, 100%. And then when you add the additional pressure of this being the Champions League, that everyone knows that Emma Hayes and Chelsea, you know, the elusive Champions League, and coming off the back of having a WSL game on Wednesday night, and coming off the back of a cup game, you know, a few days before that, and you're thinking, God, like, to have that level of discipline. I mean, after the game, Captain Erin Cuthbert said, we were more disciplined this year. We weren't chasing spaces. As a midfielder, you can have somebody in front of you to the side, to the left or the right, but I wasn't drawn out of position. We weren't drawn out of areas that we didn't want to be in because we knew we wanted to exploit the spaces. So do we feel that actually, I mean, you mentioned sort of Nuskin there, Leopold's also sort of, you know, helping to help them kind of remain compact. I mean, midfielder Kira Walsh was kind of saying, well, you know, they were very intense, they made it very difficult in the midfield. Do we think that that's how Chelsea managed to limit so much of Barcelona's sort of progression and, you know, the sort of really decent chances? Do we think that's where the game was won?
Yeah, I think so, yeah, because Bon Mati is the playmaker, right? But They do have so many threats across the field. I think the fact that they managed to nullify Caroline Graham Hansen so well. But you also have to factor in, I think, some of Barcelona's players just didn't have a great game. Mm-hmm. Parayuela was just not on her game that day. And that's also a factor. Emma Hayes said that sometimes you just need a little bit of luck. And there were moments where Alexia Putellas missed that, you know, golden chance in injury time with almost the last kick of the game. Parayuela had a number of chances that she skied or put wide. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was that part of it as well, but you have to credit Chelsea's game plan because they made it so difficult for Barcelona to play that kind of free-flowing football that maybe we're used to. I think it's like one of those, being comfortable without possession mm-hmm. must be a really hard thing to get used to and to be okay with, and to kind of have to shift your game plan so quickly from a game midweek to now a very different type of game where you need to be comfortable, you need to not jump too early. I guess it's a bit like boxing someone that you know is going to throw a load of punches, but if you can knock them out, it doesn't really matter how many punches they throw, right? So I guess it's a bit like that. It's being okay with them having the ball. It's prevented them from actually creating those clear-cut chances, and I think Chelsea did a very, very good job of that.
Yeah, the game management was just on point. I think they seemed to kind of draw fouls in the right places. They were kind of running down the clock. I mean, and that's no mean feat. I mean, you're sort of going up against 36,428 Barcelona fans, pretty much.
The whistle's blowing. Oh my God.
Yeah, you could hear. It was absolutely like, I think it was maybe the acoustics of the stadium, but that was all you could hear sort of, especially towards the kind of end of the game as it sort of like, you know, really creeped up in like the ante. And yeah, that Putellas chance, I mean, on any other day, that's kind of hitting the back of the net. So I think a degree of it potentially was luck in, like, I mean, it could have easily been a draw if not, you know, Barcelona did have their fair share of chances, but go on, you're going to jump in. Go on.
Equally, Mayra Ramirez had that golden opportunity.
Absolutely.
You know, it could have been 2-0 to Chelsea. I need to see that Paredes foul on Ramirez in the box again, mm-hmm. because on first glance, I thought it was a pen. So at the same time, Chelsea created more and had more shots on target. So if you're going to say this could have happened that way, well, it also could have happened the other way. Chelsea could be going home 2-0 up instead of 1-0. So, you know, It swings and roundabouts, right? I think, yes, there is definitely an element of luck and you need that, but a lot of it is down to good tactics. And you touched on that kind of game management and Aitana Bonmatí accusing Chelsea of playing dirty. Like, she's frustrated and I get it. She didn't have the influence she normally does. Mm-hmm. You can understand Barcelona being annoyed. You know, I think the Ramirez, she went down twice and she had picked up knocks. She was being manhandled numerous times. The Jess Carter one, she got a ball straight to the face. Like, I can understand why she went down. Nuskin also was actually an injury. But of course, Chelsea were playing down the clock. You have to do that against Barcelona. It's bloody tiring.
Well, I definitely think one of the moments that the game did kind of pivot on, I mean, we've got to talk about the VAR controversy.
Oh my God.
53rd minute, Frappart blows, pointed towards the penalty spot after Buchanan handled the ball, but the video's assistant overturned the on-field decision as Parayuela was offside in the build-up. I mean, it was so tight. I think, I mean, if there wasn't a VAR, it would be a penalty all day. The game completely changes. The momentum can shift. It's a completely different game.
Well, I was so devastated they'd gotten a penalty that I completely forgot there was VAR. So I was there. I had my camera focused where I was the other end. So I decided to shoot the bench, right? And I was like, if they save it, surely there's going to be a reaction. So my camera pointed there. I had my hand up the other way with my phone. I was trying to film the crowd. I'm like, what is taking so long? Like, I'm getting tired here trying to get this in focus, keep my camera rolling. I'm gonna, you know, and they're like, oh shit, yeah, VAR. on replay, it was offside. I don't really think it was controversial, actually. So yeah, that's, I think once I saw the replay, I was like, big, deep, like, breath, sigh, relief. But yeah, she was offside. She was interfering with play. And
I always felt a bit sorry
for
those kind of decisions, though, because it's just like an elbow. Like, and I'm like, how does it really affect the game when you're like elbow, or like your shin is like... But it is the rules. I appreciate it's the rules. You've got to draw the line somewhere. And I'm not going to moan about it too much. Well, Chelsea host Barcelona in the second leg on Saturday at 5:30. We've got another question in, which leads us quite nicely on. Xavi has asked on Instagram, what do Chelsea need to do to win the second leg? And I think calmness, composure, and obviously not conceding is the big one for me. So I'm sort of saying maybe, you know, just maybe a flank of five at the back, a flank of five in the middle, and then you just have Hampton in goal and you just sort of ride out the storm for 90 minutes. That's what I'm saying.
I think there were a few areas they could have tightened up. I think You know, they're a little bit sloppy in possession at times, forcing Buchanan, for example, having to make some last-ditch tackles because she was a little bit sloppy with passes out from the back. Mm-hmm. Hannah Hampton's balls out weren't brilliant, so maybe something like that's another area maybe want to tighten up on a little bit. You know, I think they did a very good job of marshalling, as I've said, Caroline Graham-Hansen. It's probably something they want to do again, but equally Barcelona are going to say, okay, if that's what they're going to try and do, we need to try and, you know, counteract that. So it's a difficult one. I think not conceding early is key. Mm-hmm. I think the more the pressure builds for Barcelona, the better. I think if Barcelona score in the first 10 minutes, it's going to be a problem for Chelsea. So that would be my first thing, is keep calm and composed, particularly in the first half. And just be clinical, which is an easy thing to say, but, you know they can create chances against them. They just need to be clinical when they do.
I think it's that they've gained this kind of like big psychological advantage. I mean, obviously I appreciate, like, you know, a 1-0 lead can be quite easily overturned, but I think like you have to go into that with the mentality like this game is being played at your home, Stamford Bridge. You have a great run of form at Stamford Bridge. Lauren James, get Lauren James on, because she loves Stamford Bridge. That is absolutely where she excels and performs her best. So I do think like that I have high hopes. I have really, really high hopes. I mean,
I'm scared.
Yeah, absolutely shitting myself, but still have high hopes.
Scotty predicted this, by the way. He did pull Chelsea out in the Barcelona-Chelsea.
Was that just for the... Yeah. Was that who to go forward, or was that just for the first leg? Are we doing like a first leg and a second leg?
I need to double check with him how he felt that question was being asked, because I literally just said, who's winning the semi-final, Chelsea or Barcelona? And he pulled out Chelsea. So I will check in with him. I think just for positivity, we should just say it means the whole thing. Semi-final.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I thought. That's what I would have taken. I just wanted to check on the finer details. Right, some big news for Chelsea last week. It's been confirmed that Anne Katchenberger is leaving the club and joining Gotham FC in the NWSL. I mean, big news. I don't think it's particularly unexpected. She obviously hasn't had much game time, with Hannah Hampton sort of stepping in as the kind of, Emma Hayes' number one go-to gal in the sticks. But, I mean, she's been an absolutely huge part of the club. 114 appearances in the Women's Super League across 6 years. She said, I'm incredibly excited to join Gotham FC this season. The NWSL is one of the top leagues in the world right now, and I'm very excited to compete and be a part of this league. Chelsea obviously pays sort of massive tribute to her and wished her well. But she's just such an icon in the game. And I think she's quite like subtle and understated, but she's just had such a big part of Chelsea's history and success and where they've got to now. I mean, Rach, what did you think when the announcement came?
Like you said, not surprised, but equally kind of sad that it happened in the way that it did, and that Chelsea fans maybe weren't given the chance to say goodbye to her, because as you say, she's had such a huge part in their success. So that is a little bit of a shame, because Chelsea are very good at giving their legends a send-off. So yeah, sad about that, but can understand it. The fact that she wants to try and get into the Olympic squad, she had to do something. Mm-hmm. So maybe surprised it didn't happen earlier in the January transfer window. But yeah, it's a bit of a shame to see her go in that way. But she's had some incredible moments in a Chelsea shirt. And the one that stands out for me is her performance against Lyon in the Champions League last season in the second leg. She was unbelievable. Oh, and like you say, understated, but on the pitch, so passionate.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so she'll be a big loss, and was one of the WSL great goalkeepers for sure.
Yeah, I mean, 4 WSL titles to her name, 3 FA Cups, 60 clean sheets in those 114 appearances. I mean, I mean, as goalkeepers go, I mean, I was never going to get there, to be honest. I was quite a way off that. But yeah, I just I think it's like you. I just feel a bit sort of sad that, you know, we're sort of losing one of our big WSL icons to the US. You seem to be sort of in this kind of like period of taking these kind of like our favourite stars.
Yeah,
in
we
a way.
See you. Yeah. We see you. We see what you're doing.
Honestly, can you just stop now? Just poaching
the players with your money. Shut up.
But at the same time, I think Chelsea do seem to be in very good hands. I've been very impressed with sort of how Hannah Hampton's been getting on this season. She's been growing in confidence. I feel like she has the backing of the whole team, and she steps into that position still at a really young age. Like, Yeah, so I think it's sort of like, it's a changing of the guard. And I think you do get to that point as a player where, you know, I saw the same thing when I was sort of at Palace, that you kind of get to a point where, you know, you're still on a, you know, fairly good run of form. But at the same time, the youth coming through the game is so brilliant and so talented. And they're sort of, you know, doing all this like new goalkeeping technique that, you know, we weren't doing sort of back in the day. I mean, using your left foot, bizarre.
What?
Bizarre. Mind
blown. That's what we're standing on.
Playing out from the back. No, I won't be having any of it. Won't be having any of it.
Haven't you ever heard of a
movement? Starting the attacks. I will not. I promise you that. So
getting an assist. Go away, Anna.
So I think, like, obviously goalkeeping has moved on. So that, I think that's why you're kind of seeing, like, yeah, the Kiara Keatons, the Hannah Hamptons doing so well, because they've been brought up in that era of expecting more from your goalkeeper. You're not just a shot stopper. And I think Anne Katchenberger has done so well to kind of develop with that space. Absolutely. But yeah, I think you do get to a, you get a point where you've got sort of about, what are you laughing at?
I'm just thinking of you and someone telling you to play sweeper keeper and you asking for a broom. Like, I could just see
I will
it happen.
Not get out of my box.
The youth of today.
Yeah, I said I bowed out gracefully. I was very close to being pushed. So, yeah, we'll get onto that in the Palace section.
And now you have this platform to show your business.
Is it that evident? Is it that obvious?
Slightly.
Moving swiftly on, Champions League football still. Lyon somehow beat PSG 3-2 in the first leg of the other semi-final. They scored three goals between the 80th and 86th minute after PSG had been 2-0 ahead for almost the whole second half. I mean, what?
I was walking the streets of Barcelona looking for a tapas, okay? And I was looking at my clock and I was like, Gran, it's 2-0 to PSG, no bother. In the 10 minutes it took for me to get to a restaurant and sit down, it was 3-2.
Carnage.
What the fuck?
Absolutely carnage. But I do love the fact that we've got these, like, quarterfinals where we've got, semi-finals where we've got these kind of, like, teams that are doing it so close that you really don't know how the second leg is going to go. Like, it could go anyway. So, yeah, very interesting weekend ahead.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
In WSL news, Man City are keeping their foot on the pedal. Absolutely no let up for Chelsea, who were, I want to say, off this weekend, but not off this weekend at all.
Yeah, having a casual break in Barcelona.
Very much still on business. Man City back at the top of the table, a 3-point lead with a 5-0 win over West Ham, where they were 2-0 up inside 3 minutes. I mean, it was quite a comprehensive win from Man City. Surprising, I think, given West Ham's kind of run of form, that there wasn't sort of more disruption. Also, Man City set a new WSL record for 13 successive league wins. They got their first goal, Leilu Harbi, the opener, in under a minute. That kind of set the tone for how the game kind of went. I mean, Rach, what were your thoughts? Because I wasn't expecting this to be a 5-0 runaway.
Well, I've spoken in the past about West Ham's lack of consistency.
That you have.
Numerous times. And yeah, a frustrating one from West Ham because it felt like they were still in the change rooms for the first kind of 15, 20 minutes. I mean, it helps if you defend people. That generally helps with the preventing goals because nobody was marking Uhabi. Second goal, there were two defenders around Bunny Shaw. I don't really know what they were doing around. They were just kind of like, they were stood around her. Bunny Shaw took it down with her chest and fires into the top corner. I mean, a lot of that's to do with the fact that Bunny Shaw is incredible. The fact she could do that with two players around her. Unbelievable goal.
I think it also came off a shin pad. It didn't look like she'd made that great a connection. Came off a shin pad and ended up in top bins anyway.
Fine. That's just another way that she can score goals. I feel like Manchester City didn't give West Ham time to breathe in the first 20
suffocated.
Minutes.
Suffocated.
They were chasing shadows most of the time, particularly in midfield. They had no chance to build from midfield, West Ham, because they couldn't get any time on the ball. You know, foot on the pedal, absolutely. Like, Man City just came out of the blocks at 100 miles an hour. Their press was excellent. They were getting so much joy down the width, which is obviously a huge kind of strength of Manchester City's. And yeah, again, Bunny Shaw is the second quickest player to reach 50 WSL goals.
And what a 50th goal it was. What a goal
after
it was.
Minima.
A diving header. Absolutely incredible.
I do think the 5-0 maybe doesn't fully entirely reflect the game. You know, a lot of the commentary has been about how Manchester City blew them away and West Ham were outplayed and outclassed in every area. And look, Manchester City were so dominant. But West Ham were so unlucky not to have a goal or two in that game.
Absolutely.
They hit the crossbar three times in the second half. Ciara Keating made an unbelievable point-blank save around 25 minutes. I think from 25 minutes onwards, West Ham had finally found their feet a little bit. They were kind of like, okay, I have a bit of an idea of what I need to be bloody doing here. You know, I think they shifted to a back five, which kind of clogged up, made it harder for Man City to find space. But, you know, they stopped doing things like, at one point, Mackenzie Arnold just passed the ball out through the middle and Bunny Shaw got there first. Like, don't do that. So they started playing more of it over the top as well, which I think helped. And it just felt like West Ham were still in the dressing rooms. And after kind of 25, 30 minutes, they were like, okay, calm down a little bit. Like, just chill. Give us a second to get into this game. And yeah, I think the two goals in the second half within, 6 minutes of each other, that was a switching off moment, I think, as well. Because I think, as I said, West Ham should have at least scored one or two in that game. But yeah, they'll be frustrated with that start, bloody hell.
I think it was that, the moments that West Ham could have scored, and yeah, absolutely, like a degree of that was probably luck. An inch lower, an inch in, and you kind of got that goal. And I think that it kind of, those kind of goals, I think, swing the momentum of the game. Because at that point, obviously, they're sort of 3-0 up. But the three chances that West Ham would have got, if they hadn't have hit the post, you'd be looking at a very equal game. So, but I have to, 100% I agree with you that the Man City dominance was absolutely incredible. And I think we sort of touched there a little bit on the sort of the amount of goals, the amount of chances that were being created. I mean, Jess Park with that sort of the final smooth, calm finish. She was enjoying herself. And I think that's just kind of indicative of the kind of Jess Park that we've seen throughout this entire season. So, I mean, do you think that Jess Park has been sort of like the integral, or a very integral part, I suppose, of their success this year? I mean, it kind of feels a bit undeniable, to be honest.
I think the fact that she was able to step in after Jill Roard got injured and the levels didn't drop. And that's very hard to do when you've got a key player going out, is to find that replacement and to maintain that level of consistency that you've established. And Jess Park stepped in, and if anything, maintained and elevated the way they've been playing. So I think that's been incredible. I think the players around her allow her to have that freedom and to play with confidence. And yeah, she's been a massive part. I think I will say my biggest worry, speaking of key players, is that Bunny Shaw went off right at halftime in injury time. I don't know, it looked really innocuous, whether someone caught her foot with a boot or whether she landed funny, I'm not sure, but definitely holding her foot, really struggling to put any weight on it. I was told she came back on in a moon boot on crutches. So that's a concern because they just don't have another Bunny Shaw. And if they're chasing down goals and that it comes down to goal difference and your main goal scoring threat gets injured, that's my worry. So hopefully it's not as bad as it looks, but I am a little bit concerned because the last thing we want to see is Bunny Shaw out.
Well, this is the thing. It's the back end of the season, the business end. You've got Man City sitting 3 points above Chelsea. Obviously, Chelsea have got the game in hand. Goal difference is going to be one of those big, big things that it possibly could or probably will come down to. So Chelsea's goal difference at the moment, 39. Man City on 42, thanks to obviously getting so many flipping goals at the weekend. I mean, do we think now, so given this performance from Man City, given how dominant they are, the fact that, you know, Chelsea are sort of focused so much at the moment on the Champions League, do we think that actually this is Man City's time to shine, time to walk away with it?
It's still
too early to say. Where's Scotty?
It is. It's their time to chip away and to keep that pressure and push down on that pressure, if you like, to pile that more pressure on. It's, you know, the more they can widen that goal difference gap, the better. You know, I think Chelsea getting that 3 over Aston Villa massively helped as well. They're playing Liverpool next, I believe, midweek next week, I think it is. So it's just another thing for Chelsea to think about. A win isn't enough anymore, you know, and it's both sides have to think about that now. It's not just about winning. You have to win and you have to score as many goals as possible. So that brings its own challenges. So, yeah, I think it is really hard to call. I feel like the kind of dial is in the middle, right? And every so often it's leaning towards Chelsea and then Man City will do something. It leans a little bit back towards Man City and it just kind of swings between the two. So it's really exciting. It's really exciting. I don't know whether it'll be decided before the final game of the season. I hope it's not. I hope it comes down to the last game of the season and we've got a trophy up and down the M6, but we'll see.
Do you not think, though, I think we talked about this at the start of the season, how amazing it would be if every single one of the top four clubs kind of walked away with some silverware. So Arsenal with the Conte Cup, you've got Man United possibly poised for the FA Cup, Man City with the league and Chelsea with the Champions League title. That's kind of it. That kind of feels fair, guys.
That'd be unreal. It'd be very cool.
That would be a very good sweep. I really appreciate it. And I'd appreciate seeing that. I think that feels like a really like lovely ending. Like everyone's a winner kind of thing.
Except everyone from 5 below.
Yeah. Well, Liverpool's 1-0 defeat of Bristol City has left them on the brink of relegation and guaranteeing West Ham safety. I feel like Bristol City have been treading through mud since the start of the season. It has been absolutely torrid. Out of the 19 games, they've won only one, picked up 6 points. And I feel like they're just sort of like ready just to kind of be over and done with it now. Like it's kind of like, you know, there's not been too many moments of like happiness for the squad, really. And I just, it's going to be championship life for them again.
They've been on the brink for a while. I feel like they've been hanging on the edge of the cliff, going to West Ham. Just go, just save yourselves. And West Ham are like, no, it's cool, we'll save it longer. And they're like, go, just don't bother anymore. And West Ham are like, no, it's fine, we'll stay a little bit longer. Eventually they'll go, okay, fuck it, we'll go. But not yet. Not yet. It's still mathematically possible.
It's still mathematically possible, but do you think it is probable?
No.
There we go. I think it's one of those kind of like certain eventualities that I think a lot of us predicted at the start of the season. Yeah, it will be a sad thing to see them go down in the season that they came up. Like I don't ever want to see that kind of yo-yoing between leagues. But the gap between Bristol City and the rest of the WSL, I think, is too wide at the moment.
I think, well, I'm going to defend them a little bit. I think they've had some really good performances, particularly against the top sides at times. I think they've struggled with big injuries at key moments, which has massively not helped. You know, there's been games that could have gone either way and hasn't gone their way. So I don't think it's been, you know, a complete failure of a season. The fact that they got their, 6 points on the board as well, which many would have written them off entirely. So I'm going to give them that. I think the problem was they didn't win the games that they should have won, if you know what I mean. And you'd get these great performances against an Arsenal, lose 2-1, and you're like, great. But if you put that performance in against maybe a Leicester or a West Ham or a Brighton or whatever, that's where you could have got the 3 points. Do you know what I mean? So it's that difficult balance of getting the players to be able to play at that level absolutely every week, which is what's mm-hmm. difficult. What is hard for them now is they've got Manchester City next, then they've got Chelsea, and then they've got Everton. So the run in for them versus West Ham is very, very difficult.
Wishing you all the best of luck, Bristol City. It's never nice to see any teams, you know, that have had so much passion and energy and drive and ambition to like stay up, be sort of knocked every single week. Like, that's hard. That's difficult to take. Absolutely.
They've done an incredible job around the club and the stadium and the fan engagement. They've one of the highest average attendances in the WSL, which is amazing. Their fan experience, match day experience is brilliant. So they've done a really good job, and I hope that we see them back up again.
100%. Talking of clubs that might be replacing Bristol City in the WSL, Palace. I honestly feel gutted. I feel absolutely gutted that I might have left the club probably a year too early, if I'm being honest.
Did you ask yourself, is that maybe why they've been so successful?
Do you know what? I don't have the self-awareness to have raised that issue, to have reflected back in quite
that
way.
That's why I'm here, Chloe.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate you holding
the
mirror
to
me
so
honestly. Yeah. I do appreciate that.
Go on, so, gloat.
Fine. This weekend, Palace got their win over Lewis, which has meant that they are on 45 points. Charlton are on 42 points. Both have a game left to play. Charlton could win their game and Palace could lose their game. However, Charlton would have to make up 23
goal swing.
23 goals in one game to make sure that they go through to the WSL. So,
easy.
By all intents and purposes, Palace are pretty much championship winners, which is like the most wild thing. Even though I'm not even a part of the team anymore, there's like this ridiculous amount of emotion that I've seen, like watching the progression of the team. Obviously, I was a player for 2 years and then I stayed with them as a media manager for a year afterwards. And the trajectory of the team, I mean, last season they were fifth. The season before that, they were fourth. When I was still playing for them, Rach, we were fourth. We were heading in the right direction. Thank you. That's where my self-awareness ends. But like when you look at sort of like where they've been going this entire time. So like when I was last playing for them, we scored 35, let in 39 goals. They were fifth last season.
Sorry, you were just saying you're going in the right direction while you were there and let in 39
yeah,
goals.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. I think that defensively, I'm not doing myself any favours here because that is where we were lacking defensively. We were leaky at the back. And I hate to say that I was a part of that. But listen, if the ball has got through, if the ball has landed in the back of your net, okay, so that's going to be 10 other players first.
All right. Yeah,
that
no,
sounds
sure.
super bitter. Anyway, so when we were fourth, let in 39 goals. When they were fifth last season, let in 34 goals. And
getting
now,
better.
They are, I don't understand. Like, I mean, in terms of like the goals conceded, the goals in attack. I mean, I've never seen a Palace look so strong at the back, look so like progressive up top, so fiery. And I think to me, it feels like a massive, massive part of that has been like bringing in Laura Kaminsky. She has been like the experience in that woman. I mean, 36 years old. She's been named Championship Manager of the Month a couple of times. She's brought in all these incredible new sign-ins. They've brought in Grace as Head of Women and Girls Football. And they've just... I just feel like there's just so much like positive energy around the club.
Obviously having friends in the squad, like have you heard from them this season? What is it that's clicked? Because obviously we went there beginning of last season, first game of the season.
Yep.
Saw them play. We were really impressed by them. But then they just, you know, it kind of was so inconsistent last season where they were coming out with these great results and then they were losing games they shouldn't have lost. And, you know, from what I'd seen initially, I thought, wow, this looks like a team. They brought in a load of new players. They're clicking really quickly. They're gelling, playing some great football, and then finished fifth. So what have the players been saying that's been the big change this season?
Yeah, so I went down to the ground. I was let in. I wasn't just, you know, hanging around, you know. Hi, remember me? Type vibes.
God, she's back. She's back,
oh,
guys.
Christ, why?
They lost that weekend.
Well, I went to go and spend some time with them. I was doing an interview with them, Laura Kaminsky, and I know Laura from our Spurs days. She was working with the academy when we were sort of doing our like big WSL push and campaign. And like, I think it's Kaminsky's energy. I mean, obviously, like Palace went through a bit of a turbulent time. You know, had to their manager, the coach left. Laura Kaminsky comes in. Grace Williams becomes their new head of girls and women's football there. And it feels like then there was kind of like a bit of a fresh start, a blank sheet. They're at this amazing training facility down near sort of Selhurst Park as part of the academy. And they've got these beautiful 3G pitches. Like the girls were laughing and joking, like having these beautiful dinners. I actually had a dinner with them, had some salmon, rice and potatoes. It was very, very lovely.
Little small table in the corner for you over there. Yeah. Feed her and she might leave.
That old bag. Yeah, she's back again. So, yeah, and it was just the energy. It was a positive energy around the club. And I think it's not even like the amazing signings. I mean, they brought in Rhea Percival from like New Zealand international squad, like Hayley Nolan from Ireland. But also, I mean, they've had players like Hughes. I mean, she's been playing for Wales for a number of years. Molly Mae Sharp as well. I mean, she's one of the players that I was playing with at the time at Palace, and she wasn't being used. Like, I never knew why that she wasn't being given this opportunity to play more, because she off the pitch, she was one of the most hardworking, dedicated players you'll ever see. Like, training sessions, she'd be putting in the extra effort, spending time in the gym. She would be like one of those one percenters, like going above and beyond to try and get herself back in the squad. And now, like, she's back in the squad. I mean, you can just see how much she absolutely loves being there. And like under the helm of, you know, Kaminsky, 15 years of coaching experience. She's been at Brighton. She's been at Watford, Chelsea, Tottenham Hotspur. You know, she's one of only 21 female coaches to have a UEFA A licence in England. I mean, absolutely massive. And like, it's not only just like, it's the vibe. It's the fact that they're all having fun and they're all laughing and they're all kind of like laughing but taking things seriously. And I think that's a massive part of like the ethos and like culture that has been built. And the girls were like, they were celebrating Ariah Dennis's 18th birthday with a Colin the Caterpillar cake, which was absolutely amazing. And like, everyone was sort of like the strength and conditioning coach there, nutrition coach were there. They had like the smallest sliver of cake and it was like, right, get to the gym right now. So it's like, so it's like not a kind of like, you have those moments of like being really like fun and energetic and stuff, and the girls absolutely genuinely love each other, but also like, yeah, business
very
as
much
usual.
Like, yeah, business, like focused, you know, and I guess that's what you're going to need. If you got up into the WSL, you've got to be really focused, really on it. How do you think they will do in the WSL? Do you think they're ready for it?
I think it's always a massive, massive challenge. It doesn't matter how ready you think you are for the WSL. When you're faced with competition like Arsenal, like Chelsea, like Man City, like Man United, and like you're having to face and do those big journeys time and time again against players that are world class, that are playing on international stages, you know, World Cup, you know, winners, like the toll, whatever you think you expected in terms of like, because the stats are completely different with the WSL and the Women's Championship. They're vaguely similar for some games, but against an Arsenal, you have to play completely differently. Like, you go from being, it's like when you go from being from primary school into secondary school. You go from being the big dogs of primary school to all of a sudden being the year sevens into secondary school. And, like, the jump is absolutely massive. But I do think, I think it's going to depend a lot on recruitment. And I think it always does when you're making that jump up. And you know, you never want to see a situation, I suppose, with Bristol where, you know, they didn't perhaps have the budget to be able to bring in some of the players that maybe they would have liked to kind of bolster the squad. Crystal Palace has the backing of, you know, a big Premier League outfit. I'd like to see that sort of continue and that investment be there so they can put in more investment into the squad and hopefully make sure they've got a really good chance of staying up there. Do I think they'll maintain it and stay up there? 100%. Do I think they're going to find it absolutely disgustingly tough? All day, but that's what you want.
The other downside is what they also achieved at the weekend was ensuring that Lewis got relegated, which was really sad because
yes,
they're a lovely, lovely club, a real community club, doing things a little bit differently. It also saw there was an opportunity for them to say goodbye to Maggie, of course, Maggie Murphy, who we've spoken to, who's had an immeasurable impact down there. Scott Booth, manager's also leaving. So a lot of changes there for Lewis, and potentially it'll be a difficult job to go down and come back up.
100%. I think Lewis, it feels really sad. I think when you've been a part of the championship for such a long period of time, you've been at the forefront of like trying to, you know, do things differently, be community owned, being driven by your fans, the fan engagement, having this whole vibe around equality and paying your male and female players the same, which is, you know, one of those big things that Maggie kind of set out to do at the very start. And like, it feels like the massive end of an era to see someone like Maggie, like the CEO, step down. I mean, she's been so integral in kind of creating this atmosphere at the Dripping Pan. She secured the Leyland Scott deal, which is massive for them, oversaw like the Premier League pitch renovation, the marketing around the fan engagement with like the shed, the colourful sheds and things like that. Like, she's always tried to do things differently. So I think, I'm really hoping that she takes some time out and like has some rest and recovery and is like doing like a whole big vibe of like sitting on a beach somewhere, just appreciating like what she's done for women's football.
But equally, I hope we hang on to her because she is such a massive, massive asset to the game. So have a break, have a breather, but please come back, Maggie.
I mean, Lewis put down this like emotional, like really beautiful video with some of their highlights. They had like these amazing moments. They got their former goalkeeper, Tatiana Saunders, scoring a goal from a free kick in her own half, stopping Leicester's 12-game winning streak when they were in the championship. Like, and then they had this like lovely little sort of passage by Rhianne Cleverly, the Lewis captain, sort of at the end, sort of saying like, we'll be back and like, we'll be back stronger. And I just think that was indicative of the kind of vibe and like the strength and the character of that that club. I used to absolutely hate playing down there. The Dripping Pan used to scare the shit out of me every time because the fans are so loud and so noisy. But yeah, I do hope they make an appearance back in the championship because, yeah, they're one of the best. On the subject of the lower tiers, Stoke City player Kayleigh McDonald went viral last week. She injured her ACL last month in a game against Burnley in the Women's National League North, but claimed that she was then told by her club that she would have to join the NHS waiting list to receive treatment. So she tweeted out the following: "So sad to say that just when I thought the women's game was finally getting somewhere, I received the worst news that I'll have to join the NHS waiting list for surgery after an injury I sustained playing a league game for my club. I'm now in my fourth week post-injury with nothing in place. I'm having to pay to see a private consultant, which is very expensive, in hope that my knee can get looked at and operated on in a more timely manner." Rach, what were your kind of thoughts when you saw this crop up? Because it kind of feels like one of those moments in women's football that you're not surprised about, but also because we're progressing, you are surprised about, because you're like, why are clubs not learning from this PR disaster? And it's so easily rectified.
Yeah, well, Stoke have come out now and said they will pay for it, but it's just another example of people having to be embarrassed into doing the right thing, which is so frustrating. And we've talked before about growth and investment in clubs and what that means. And it's not always about wages. It's about this kind of stuff. You know, you can't say you're investing in a women's team, you want to get promoted, look how great we are as a club, and not do the basics. Like, they need their bodies to play the game. That should be the main thing you're looking after, are your assets, your players. Like, they're the most important thing. So incredibly frustrating. I'm glad they've now agreed to do it. And I hope other clubs look at that and go, actually, yeah, this is probably where we should be putting some of our investment. It doesn't happen that often, but an injury like that could ruin a player's career in terms of the way that it's managed and how they get back to full fitness. So it's really important that you look after your players. So yeah, as you say, not a huge surprise to see, but still equally frustrating that it's still happening.
100%. So Kayleigh set up a GoFundMe page, which quickly raised over £11,000. And as Rach said, Stoke then sort of agreed to fund the operation. And this comes a year after Stoke's joint chairman, John Coates, outlined plans to transform Stoke's women's setup with funding to improve infrastructure and support. So we thoroughly hope that we don't see any more of these situations happening, because it just feels like it's so easily sorted. Just pay for the treatment of your women's players. Job done. Rach, where are you going to be this weekend?
Stamford Bridge, Chloe. The reverse leg, Chelsea versus Barcelona. And then I will be at Spurs versus Brighton on Sunday.
I cannot wait for that game. I absolutely cannot wait for that game.
What, Spurs Brighton?
No, the Chelsea Barca matchup. I just like the scenes, mate. No, I can't. I've got other plans, which sounds even more silly when I say out loud. Like, who would have other plans on a day like today? Like, I just, yeah, anyway. But yeah, that's 100% where I'm going to be glued to for the most part. In the meantime, you can find us on Instagram and X/Twitter. I am at Morgie_89. Rach is at Girls on the Ball, and we are at Upfront_Pod. You can also find us on YouTube at Upfront Pod. See you next week.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.